KBOO Portland.
Good evening. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is Trans Positive, and tonight we have the great honor of speaking with Kimberly McNeilis, who is the organizer of Gender Query, which meets at the Q Center when it's in real time. But I guess right now you're probably meeting on Zoom. Kimberly, welcome to Trans Positive.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Emma, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So let's jump right into talking about gender query because, there's a lot to talk about. I also want to make sure to talk about your own experience with, gender fluidity. But I'd like to start with gender query because I know that's been around a long time. And it's like there's like a bunch of groups that meet at the Q Center. And to me, they're sort of like when you first moved to Portland, if you're trans or non-binary, or if you're questioning, there's like some groups that meet out of the Q Center that are definitely worth checking out. There's the Trans Women Support Group, there's Trans Guys, there's a non-binary group, and there's Gender Query, which has been around for a long time. So tell me about Gender Query. How did it get started and what's it about?
So Gender Query got started when a local trans man and a few other people decided that there was a need for this kind of group. And I joined it actually after it had been started. And in fact, used to meet at the Q Center when they were located down by the waterfront and down by OMSI and all of that. And as far as I know, Gender Query is kind of the only non-gendered, sort of gender-related group at Q Center. I've been facilitating, I think, for the last 8 years or so. When this person stepped down, people needed to fill the void to keep their group going, and I was one of the people that was asked. And over time, it's just turned into me being the facilitator. But Gender Query in specific is, and I should have been prepared and like read the standard stuff from the Q Center website, but it is a group for primarily discussing gender, and for those that are non-cisgendered, it is a place for everybody that wants to come for respectful discussion, however. So primarily, it is people that would fall under the trans umbrella broadly, though we certainly have had cisgender people join the group over the years. And I think it's really important to have a space that isn't binary gendered. So it's not specifically for women or people on the feminine spectrum, or specifically for guys or those on the masculine spectrum. It is yes to those, yes to non-binary people, yes to people who think gender is a silly construct and don't really want to have a gender, don't have a gender, anywhere in between. We also have a Facebook group, before I forget to mention it, and that group has people from all over the U.S., I think, and a few people from outside. So the reach is beyond Portland and the Q Center's groups that meet But to answer your point earlier, we are meeting by Zoom during the pandemic, and I keep an email list that I let people know, and I post it up on Facebook too. So thank you. That was a boom. Okay, I've dump trucked all the information. There you go. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you. What else?
Gender query? You know, the name of the group itself kind of seems to imply people who have questions about their gender. But it's not specifically like, oh, I have questions about my gender, that must mean I'm transgender. So how does that conversation work?
First, for your listeners who may not know how the group is spelled, the query in Gender Query is Q-U-E-E-R-Y. So it is definitely a play on the word queer. And queer as a positive thing. Queer as in different from, you know, standard cisgender, heteronormative, non, you know, GLBTQIA plus community folks. So it's actually, I will probably say this a lot this evening, but it's sort of D, all of the above. It is a place where people who are questioning their gender or wondering where they are on their gender journey, not to frame it in terms of transition track or from the binary poles, just this process of discovery of being clear about what one's gender is and how that fits into society, how that fits into family and friend structures, how that fits into to the queer community. So gender query is both. It's we have once a month meetings where we'll pick a topic and have a discussion that's broadly gender related and oftentimes specific to transgender related. And it is a discussion to talk about issues facing the people in the group or more broadly to society around gender and often around being differently gendered. And that being said, going back to something you said earlier about sort of an anchor group, I certainly have experienced that people may come for a while and hang out and get the lay of the land in Portland and get a sense of the community and their gender and all of those things. And some may keep coming and others will sort of pass through and go on. And for all I know, they go to other more strongly gendered groups, you know, trans guys or trans femme or the other groups that are out there. Let me stop there. Did that answer your question?
Sure, yeah.
And what else can I say about that?
So when gender query first started, I think that the term non-binary wasn't quite as popular or broadly accepted as a category as it is now. Do you think that the gender query group would have been a non-binary group if it had started back when non-binary like kind of became a term that like we all are? I mean, now when I speak about the trans community, I always say trans and non-binary because so many people now define themselves as non-binary. So how does non-binary fit into gender query?
It fits under the umbrella of gender query. So there, in fact, I've been meaning to clarify whether the specifically non-binary group at the Q Center is still going. That was Out of This Binary was the name of the group, and I think it may still be meeting. I've heard that maybe not. But to go back to your original question and sort of the context here, absolutely, when GenderQuery started, or at least even when I got involved 10 plus years ago, non-binary wasn't even really in the vocabulary that I heard. Like, cisgender was a new term back when I joined this group, at least it was for me. And I think the language was still forming around that. So if I can, I guess to say it, to answer it as simply as possible, non-binary is one of the identities around gender that is part of the community of people that are welcome to come to GenderQuery, and part of the discussion that would happen around gender. So there are cisgendered people, there are non-binary people, there are binary gendered people, there are gender fluid people like myself that may run up and down that spectrum. There are people that are agender, that non-binary doesn't fit because it still implies non-binary gender. You know, it's just sort of like, well, gender is a social construct and one that's kind of arbitrary. And not that I'm agender and can speak to that very eloquently, but, you know, from what I understand of it, it's this idea that, hey, let's just get to know each other as people. Let's not rely on this convenient construct of gender to put somebody in a box and understand them and assign some expectations of who they are and how I should interact with them based on this marker that society has invented.
So as long as we're talking about the mathematics of gender,
yeah,
let's also include talking about sexual orientation so people kind of understand what that means. How does sexual orientation work within a group like GenderQuery? Is it another category? Or is it not relevant?
It is of course relevant in the sense that we all have a sexuality, even if that's to be asexual. So if we're going to categorize people as, do you have a sexuality or not? And if so, what is it? Then we bring that into the room with us, of course. We bring in our gender, we bring in our sexuality, and we bring in our biology. So this is one of the models that I used to understand for myself years ago. I think of this three-dimensional space of, I have a gender identity. So there's one axis. There, I have a sexuality. There's another axis. Okay, we've got a two-dimensional space. And I have a biology, and there's another axis. And of course, you could invent four-dimensional and all that, but it starts to get hard to track. And so everybody can kind of place themselves within that space. You know, what is my gender identity? What is my sexuality? If they know or they care to share, what is my, you know, biology? And biology, by the way, is not as simple as XX and XY, as I imagine you know, and most of your listeners know, I'm sure, as well. So coming back to this idea of sexuality, we have people that are heterosexual, same-sexual, polysexual or pansexual, people that are asexual. All of those identities attendees have disclosed. So again, it's, hey, if you want to come and have some respectful dialogue broadly around gender and how gender fits into the world, and bring your whole self and talk about how your sexuality and gender overlap, to an extent that happens. I will say, you know, our primary focus isn't on sexuality, so we don't tend to get into deep discussions about that. I also personally think that the Puritans got kicked out of England, came here, and managed to make our colonizer society really repressed around sexuality. So, you know, I think in general, people don't talk about it unless the group or the topic is really focused.
So for the average listener, for an average person in Portland who may not know that much about transgender, gay, lesbian, non-binary, genderqueer, they might, like, if I'm having a conversation with them, you know, and I say, well, someone who's transgender is somebody who was assigned this gender at birth, and now they're going to that gender. And, like, people nowadays might say, oh, that kind of makes sense. I guess I understand that. Not really, but I'll accept it. But now when you say, like, you're genderqueer, they might think, oh, that just means they don't want to go all the way. Or they're not, like, you know, like, why don't they want to go all the way and just become like that other gender or something? Do you ever have that kind of conversation in your group?
I can't remember a recent conversation like that in the group, to be honest. That being said, I think, yeah, most of the people that are in the group are somewhere on the aware of gender as a thing that can be more than binary. And that being said, have I had that discussion or am I aware of that discussion out in the world? Absolutely. If somebody came in with that question, then okay, there's a question to be answered. I think that's, you know, at a 101 level, and there are people mm-hmm. that are at a 101 level. You know, I would certainly work to welcome them in, answer their question as succinctly as I could. If they were interested in talking more about it, you know, not take away necessarily from our group time and what we're discussing to do education. And if everybody's interested in education, great. I mean, there are people all along gender I know people have a problem using spectrums and axes as a analogy for gender, sexuality, whatever, but using that as a simple device, there are people all along the gender spectrum that come to gender query. There are also people all along this journey of discovery of themselves and of their gender, of their sexuality, of you know, becoming a little more woke about intersectionality between oppressions between our community and communities of color and so on. And you know, somebody's showing up to have respectful dialogue, to understand, to share their experience in a respectful way. Great, that's what this group is for.
When people are trying to understand what gender fluidity means or gender queerness, how does it mean that you can just kind of be whatever gender you want? It just depends on how you feel that day. Is it something more stable? Like, you know, in this context you're going to present this way, in this context you're going to present that way, or is it more of a long term thing? Like, for a long time I'm going to dress like this, and then later I'll dress like that. I mean, how does that work, like, for people who are gender queer or gender fluid?
So many thoughts running around in my brain.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can pull those things apart. There's presentation of gender and what people wear. There's also gendered aspects of how you interact with people,
mm-hmm.
your language patterns, your emotional connection, all of those things. So if we're going to talk about gender and its expression, it's all of those things.
Those are all good.
Yeah, yeah. So let me pull apart even gender queer and gender fluid. Gender queer, I kind of view as a broader, closer to umbrella term, in that, you know, you're queer about your gender in some way. You don't fit into the binary boxes that you were assigned at birth, for example. Broadly speaking, that could be considered gender queer, and that's part of where gender query comes from. Let's look at gender. Wait, we were assigned one of these two boxes. What if that doesn't fit? What do I do now, right? to go back to answer how I would maybe try and succinctly answer that question, if somebody is like, well, shouldn't they just kind of go all the way to the other, you know, binary pole? Well, no, that doesn't fit everybody. I could cite, you know, throughout history and time, there have been societies that have recognized a third gender, five genders, and so on. So, and then just arbitrary things about gender, like in the late 1800s, pink was a powerful masculine color and blue was a feminine color. Just, you know, and now we have the pink and blue aisles in Target, right? Or your favorite department store for toys. And it's just this bifurcated, arbitrary, binary distinction on gender that is a societal construct and a convenient marketing ploy to say, we're gonna market to this whole class of people. And it's simple, people can get it because it's like, okay, well, my body is a certain way, I have certain primary and secondary sexual, you know, biological characteristics, therefore I must be a X or a Y on the gender spectrum. Oh wait, no, there's not a gender spectrum, there's just X or Y. So to begin to answer your question about gender fluidity, which is finally in the dictionary, by the way, which I'd like 2-3 years ago, which I was excited about. For me personally, I can't speak for all gender fluid people. And by the way, if I'm just rambling and off topic, stop me.
No, this is okay. Great.
Okay. So for me personally, since I can't speak for all gender fluid people, I actually have this sign that I wear to the Trans March or to Pride parades that says, you know, that I am wearing right in front of me that says, this is what gender fluid looks like today. And it would be a little wordy to say, this is what gender fluid looks like at this moment or this hour or today or this week. So for me, it is trying to be in tune with how is it that I am feeling and comfortable in presenting to the world, being in the world that reflects my gender. And I should really hasten to add, I will often try and present on the gender binary for safety, if nothing else, but also for moving through the world more easily. So if I'm going to go for a walk in my neighborhood, I will likely be presenting as a man or as a woman along the binary genders so that I am safe walking in my own neighborhood, that I can fit into a cognitive construct that my neighbors can understand and not get all confused or concerned about. In other contexts,
I'm already so jealous. I'm just like, gosh, that sounds great. Like I could be a man or a woman.
Or something in between. Yeah.
Or something in between. Yeah.
Or D, none of the above. Mm. So yeah, let me pick up on that. I was about to say, I went to a gender convention in New York City years ago and I wore quote unquote women's clothes. But I wasn't, I love an Eddie Izzard quote, by the way. They're just like, they're not women's clothes. I purchased them. They're mine. So, you know, for him, his identity back then was male. So they're men's clothes. I was walking down the streets of New York City doing gender queer, or gender F was the term that I heard before gender queer. I'm not going to swear on the radio. Mm-hmm.
Good, yep, and, good, because I'd have to delete it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was scary as hell. That was just, I was super, super nervous just walking a few blocks to go get lunch outside of this convention area. Or when I did that outside in Seattle. And fast forward to years later, I'm doing that in Portland around Lloyd Center. I am wearing, you know, quote unquote, women's exercise clothes, but I have not shaved my arms and legs or hairy chest. And I was wearing breast forms, so but not a wig. So I'm like, you know, if people were picking up on these gender cues, it's like, well, are you a man or a woman? No. You know, the answer is no. I am not one or the other, and I am not trying to be one or the other. I am wearing what I want, having a body shape that I want in this moment, interacting with people how I want. And that's scary as heck sometimes, and super liberating and freeing at the same time.
So during this time of COVID, is it more challenging to be genderqueer? Because it sounds like at least part of what being genderqueer is about public presentation. And since we're not really going out in public much right now or really having much kind of group interaction of any kind except on Zoom, is it more challenging to be genderqueer during COVID?
I can speak from my personal experience, and then I will try and recall what we've talked about as a group. The no and yes. I mean, for me, my gender identity doesn't change for lack of other people seeing it. And people that are non-binary or that are would hold the, you know, identity as trans woman or trans man or simply woman or man, I think I particularly get the impression that they have their identity still solid whether people are seeing them or not.
That's true.
Right? So I believe that while being isolated or socially distanced in the pandemic can bring a whole host of things, I think those that have a fairly unchanging, at least for right now, identity, if not, you know, okay, this is my identity, I have no desire to leave this identity. No, I don't think they have a problem with it. For being gender fluid, like we could totally unpack non-binary and how do you know someone's non-binary and how do they let you know they're non-binary, and there's a whole bunch of stereotypes and sort of things or tropes that may go with that. For gender
the first
fluid,
being that they all live in Portland.
Yeah, Portlandia, you know, things ensue. That and we have, you know, 32 different recycling buckets to put things in, right? Oh, okay, well, if it's a coffee cup with a lipstick, I don't know if anyone's seen mm-hmm. that one, but that was funny.
That's a good one.
And our chicken's name was Colin. So for me personally, there is an aspect of I can present at home. I can be, in fact, in some ways, the pandemic's been awesome in that I have the privilege of working from home, and I can dress however I want for work. I can express my gender however I want, particularly if I am not on a Zoom call. I can talk to my cats in a particular voice or a particular way or cadence. So there are absolutely are performative things about gender. There are in terms of how one is perceived and the societal cues we give other people to say, this is my gender. Or the ways that we try and express a gender definitely have context in interacting with other people. Go ahead.
Okay, so I've got to ask you the ultimate Portland question.
Okay.
And of course that is, the ultimate Portland question is, do you think that your cats respond, or do you think your cats notice when you like alter your gender presentation? Do they respond to you differently?
No, I don't think they do.
Right. I don't think my cats do either.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is something that I remind myself. I mean, if you want to look at it,
cats don't give a about gender.
Exactly. And you know, what's funny is I will also practice not gendering my cats. Okay.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Right. They may be male. They were assigned male at birth. And we presumably know their biology as male cats. And we have kind of a more femme, fluffy, princessy cat. And we have a, you know, adventure jungle cat.
Oh, yeah.
And seriously, I will address my cats using non-gendered terms as a way of reinforcing, you know, they're not kitty boys, they're kitty cats, or, you know, you know, adventure cat or fluff cat or, you know, all the nicknames we have for them.
You know, for the longest time, like, I just totally insisted that two of my cats were transgender. Poppy was like totally transgender. Actually, there was one cat where we didn't know what their gender was when we got her, when she was a kitten. And so we just called her a she the whole time. And then it turned out that she was a he. But like, to me, she's still a she. And it's like, our cats are like, so one of our cats, it was really neat. Like, one of our cats, a boy cat, when we got two kittens, he actually nursed them. I mean, he didn't nurse them, but he nursed them in the sense that, like, he would, like, flop over on his belly and let them, like, you know, suckle on him. And he did that, like, for quite a while, you know, and it was, that was, like, really cool that, like, a boy cat was doing that. And, you know, it was just, I guess that was just his instinct to do that, to be a nurturer that way.
It's this idea we can pull apart gender as this construct from the biology, from the physical, you know, physical characteristics of the person.
Right.
Because gender is much more than that. It's like, well, what makes a you know, a woman? Is it the ability to bear children? No. Is it, you know,
but it helps.
Yeah,
it helps somebody who does that
To perpetuate
regardless
the species,
of what you call absolutely. The person, so, it's good to have somebody who does that.
Yeah, you know, we haven't figured out asexual reproduction yet, you know, and perhaps that's a good thing. Odd people come to mind. You know, it's sort of like, does a woman stop being a woman when she has a hysterectomy? No. Right. So these biological definitions of gender don't work. I'd argue just period. They don't work. Mm-hmm. They particularly don't work for me. So to use I statements, I try and, you know, model what we've agreed to in our group on having respectful dialogue. One of those is I statements. You know, I feel really strongly that people have so conflated biology and the physical with gender that they have a really hard time pulling it apart, and they have some really strongly held misconceptions and beliefs around that, that if they started critically thinking about it, if they started thinking about, well, what makes a man a man or a woman, or, you know, when you're ready to get to 400 level stuff, well, what makes somebody neither of those, or either one of those, depending on how they are feeling, presenting, feeling, existing in the mind.
So you're listening to Transpositive here on KVOO Community Radio. Tonight we are talking with Kimberly McNeilis, who facilitates the group Gender Query, which meets at the Q Center. Kimberly, when does Gender Query meet?
We have regular meetings the first Monday of the month. It used to be when we met in person, except for holidays. And actually, for some holidays, we'll probably move the meeting time to another time. And then during the pandemic, particularly as people are having a harder time connecting to community, particularly the queer community, you know, people can't come to the Q Center, they can't hang out together physically in community. I've been trying to have a mid-month meeting as well, where we don't have a discussion topic. It's like, let's just get together and socialize and chat and connect with each other. And in fact, I really feel like I should say that the Gender Query group on Facebook that I was talking about earlier, most people join for connection to community. Like, that is primary reason that people have been joining over the last year or so, or forever. And that's just, I put in questions and they started answering them of, here's why I'm joining. And then a secondary one might be, well, to learn more about gender and my journey and where I am and what this means, and discuss it with other people and so on. I'm a big fan of Brené Brown and her work around vulnerability and shame. And one of the things that she said is that we are hardwired for connection. And I don't know about hardwired, and yeah, I think it's really important for humans to be connected, to know they're not alone, to feel an affinity with or an understanding for other people. So anyway, that was a long way of saying we meet. You know, thank you for asking. We meet first Monday of the month, online on Zoom. In order to keep it as safe a space as possible, I do not post that Zoom link anywhere publicly. I try and limit it to people that have joined the group. When it was at the Q Center, anybody could just walk into the Q Center at the appropriate time and join the meeting. I will admit I have some arguments with myself, some debate over, well, do I just open it up and then just anybody show up? Since Zoom bombing has become a thing, and particularly during the pandemic where people are disconnected from their community and really seeking connection or with other like-minded people, I tend to try and protect that as a safe space as much as I can, which is sort of a long way of saying, if you'd like to attend Gender Query, then my email is on the Q Center website. You use Facebook, then you can reach out there. And I'm realizing, unfortunately, that I've mentioned ways that require a computer, so hopefully you have access to a computer. I believe public libraries may be shut down, so I am recognizing that I don't have a good way for people without those privileges to connect with the group, and I'm sorry for that. I need to think of ways that folks out there without that kind of access can still join.
That's a great point, yeah. That's a really good point. So in the 8 years or so that you've helped to, that you've hosted Gender Query, what have been some of your favorite topics, like, that the group discusses? Can you think of one or two topics that you've just really enjoyed or that people have really enjoyed getting into?
Yes. Can I remember? Yes and no.
Right, I know. get it. Like, ask me about a show. It's like,
yeah,
I've done like 200 shows now. It's like, I don't just can't even think of them.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely if I come back on a radio show again, I'll try and prepare some thoughts and answers. But here we go. I think when we talk about relationships, relationships are complex enough when you bring gender into the relationship. gendered expectations, whether it's a simple cisgender relationship of, oh, well, the men take out the garbage and the women do the cooking, and, you know, those kinds of stereotypical, you know, if they were being written about or in a movie, trope kinds of things that cisgender people can relate to, all the way to these subtleties of, okay, well, I'm in a, you know, polyamorous relationship with, you know, these sort of gendered people, and you know, how am I going to navigate that emotional connection, especially when somebody's going through questioning their gender? So anyway, and that's over, you know, that's overcomplicating a bit. I think people are just like, wow, it sucks dating while trans, you know, sometimes, right? I think it's...
That's a great question. I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well...
I've heard some bad stories.
Well, and I think there's some fantastic stories. I mean, to like, I was reading an article recently about, you know, trans for trans, like people that are finding other trans people to date. And that takes this whole huge learning curve and question and whatever off of the table in a lot of ways, that trans people are connecting with other trans people in a romantic way as well as a friendship way. Mm-hmm. And of course all of the other relationship stuff still exists there, but I think it's also just, you know, connecting and commiserating about relationships. One of the other ones that I think brings some lively discussion is vocabulary and terms. We tend to, I think people are at lots of different levels of, in terms of their gendered language and being aware of language and talking about terminology. What is the difference between, you know, sort of some of what we've been doing, talking about, well, what's the difference between gender fluid, gender queer, non-binary, agender, you know, man, woman, trans man, trans woman, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? And, mm-hmm. and I see all of those things as distinct, though we can start, you know, lumping folks into cisgender, comfortable with your gender assigned at birth, no need to question it or change it. Which, as a quick tangent, I think in a lot of ways being non-cisgender is a gift, because I have had to examine my life in questioning my gender. Well, what else was I told that I am or that I should be or that I should believe that doesn't fit, that isn't the case? And it has made me more aware of microaggressions. It has made me more aware of prejudices, of privileges, of all of these things. It has made me aware of how I can create huge cognitive dissonance in somebody simply by existing, by presenting in a way that they didn't expect, they weren't ready for, and I break their mental frame just by being visible in public and out in the world. And that's, of course, a burden and a responsibility, and a gift all at once.
So I've got some goofy questions. I think like the cat question. This is obviously this is a softball pitch, but it's also kind of a good question too, though. People who are gender queer, which bathroom do they use?
Well, you know, I was actually going to say when you asked, well, what are some of the topics? The bathroom one is one of those groaner topics, like,
bathrooms.
Yeah, and in fact, bathrooms weren't so strongly gendered until like the late 1800s, if I remember correctly.
Ooh,
I, I read an article around that. Yeah, I guess let me succinctly say that binary gendered bathrooms suck.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it is one of the sources of angst for a ton of non cisgendered people. Yes. So that steps on a hot button issue for me. And for one, like when I first started going out and was a lot less, to make this personal and use I statements again, when I first started going out, I just didn't go. I was young and I could hold it. And so I was too afraid to use the restroom. Mm-hmm. And that was really bad for my body. And then eventually I got like, okay, I got to go. I'm presenting as a woman. I'm just going to go in. I'm going to do my business and get out as fast as possible. And that was fine. And my nervous energy, I'm sure, was being read in the room. Like, what's going on? Why is this person so nervous? If I'm not quote unquote passing, which is a whole nother topic, then what is this man doing in here trying to look like a woman and whoa, and oh, wait, they're gone. One of the things from my decades of being out in public presenting, however I'm, feeling, which is mostly in a binary gendered way, is I've really realized my attitude, the way that I am approaching people, makes a huge difference in how they will respond.
Mm-hmm.
If I am calm and I am saying, hey, this is me, and I get it, it's not what you're ready for. Not that I'm saying these words literally, just my attitude is, hey, I'm here and it's okay. I am this person. And when you're talking bathrooms, I'm here to go into the bathroom and go to the bathroom and do my business. And then, there's my long answer to the softball.
That's a great answer. It really makes me think too about, in all of our conversation tonight, one of the things that I've noticed in our discussion is that in a lot of ways being genderqueer, gender fluid, is, among other things, a resistance against categorization. There's like this impulse within our society, within our white, colonialist, patriarchal society, we have this desire to categorize things and to put everything into a box that's easily identifiable. So in some ways, being a transgender female is much easier and more acceptable than being something that refuses to be categorized. Does that sound like an accurate statement?
I agree with large portions of what you said. I would enhance it to say that there are gender fluid people like myself that I am, there are times where I'm okay being identified as a man or as a woman or as non-binary. I would broaden it to say that humans just like to categorize things and put things in boxes. I mean, why do we get rubberneckers on the road looking at a crash? We like mysteries. We like figuring mm-hmm. things out and being certain of what's around in our world and putting it in a box and figuring it out. Okay, this is this, 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 and this. I've got it all sorted. As the British would say, I've got it all sorted now. And now I know how to react and behave. So I think that there are people that are non-binary or gender fluid that are simply being themselves, that is something beyond the simple binary that our society understands. I think there are people that are actively in your face pushing against those simplistic notions and saying, yeah, that doesn't fit me, and it doesn't need to, and you can take your gender and toss it, and kind of anywhere in between. It certainly is an act of stretching societal's understanding and expectations of what gender is. Most of the world is still back at there are two genders. And it is so much more rich and colorful and deep and wonderful than there are men and there are women.
Thank you. So one of the things that I was meaning to ask, but I just didn't know if I'd have time to, was around this idea of gender and what gender is. And the question is about how gender is perceived. My question is, do you think that people who are gender fluid or non-binary or gender queer have any responsibility toward how people observe them? In other words, do you think that when you get like the experience of having different kinds of gender presentations, that is that something that you're only accountable to yourself for how you express your gender, and what other people see in you is totally on them? Or is there some kind of conversation that goes on between the viewer and the viewed that's always like an essential part of this conversation? It's almost more of a philosophical question.
Oh, it's a great question. Thank you for asking it. It's not one with a simple answer. Of course, you've learned by now, none of your questions are going to get a simple answer from me. Yes. It's just the way I think. And that's poking fun at myself, right? I mean, mm-hmm. if you ask me a yes, no question, I might be able to give you a yes, no answer.
Yes, no.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Are you a man or a woman? No. Absolutely. I took your question maybe a little differently than you meant it. So at the risk of not quite understanding your question fully, I think that as a person in the world that is presenting my gender in a particular way, when I am doing that in interaction with any other human, there's going to be this context. There's going to be this, what my presentation is, and presentation is a shorthand for physical appearance, speech patterns, aggressiveness or not, the way I interact with people, all of those things, that full sort of experience of a person. Gendered expectations kind of fit into all of those, like I said earlier. So one of the ways I took it is, as a trans person, do you have a responsibility to your community and to society? Are you a representative of your community to the rest of society? Yes, you are. And do you have a responsibility then to be aware of that and to act in a certain way? Not necessarily. And to go to personally, me as a gender fluid person and what I'm usually have the energy for and how I, if I think it's safe and appropriate, will I try and answer questions or do education for people? Absolutely. I was at the Women's March and somebody came up to me with their phone saying, hey, I want to interview people. And, you know, what do you think of this? And in my answer, I disclosed that I was trans. I think I probably don't pass fully. And as soon as I open my mouth, I pass even less. And yet I do have passing privilege, at least from a distance. And this term passing implies binary gendered and has privileges in it. But again, we're not going there. So in my answer, disclosed that I was trans, and the first question out of this guy's mouth was, oh, well, you had the surgery down there.
Yeah, right.
Right? And I basically resisted the urge to say, none of your effing business. How could you, would you go and ask a non-trans woman about her private parts? No, you would not. Get
well, I don't know.
Right? Well, actually, okay, yes, some men might. Some people might.
Yes.
However, my response was, that's not really a polite question to ask.
Yeah.
And And it frustrated him because I wasn't answering his question. And it's like, but why? It's like, what part of it's not polite and the person you've asked said it's not polite, do you need to understand? Mm-hmm. Like, we're done here. And I guess to help our conversation along, how would you answer your own question? I believe you've identified yourself as a trans woman. Forgive me if that's not correct. How would you answer as for yourself that
well, I mean, I think about it a lot. You know, I mean, I've done all these things to my body so that my body will conform with societal expectations of gender. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of really extreme things. I mean, I'm really happy with the results personally. It makes me feel good. But I think it also, like, you know, when I go into spaces where people sort of expect one gender or another, it helps me, you know, but it also helps other people a little bit. But I mean, I love your perspective, and you know, I think genderqueer is great. I mean, non-binary is definitely the future. It's like all the kids, they're all non-binary, so that's great. I love it all. It's all good.
I would add that non-binary is great, and I wouldn't necessarily say that all the kids that I've met are non-binary.
Yeah, I know. I'm exaggerating.
Yeah. This is particularly on my mind because I'm aware of somebody who just came out at work today, and they changed their pronouns in a very binary gendered way, and they got a lot of support within their company around that, and that is awesome. That is a big shift from, you know, when I was growing up or even 10 years ago, right? And binary gender transition is easier for people to understand and safer for people, both doing the transitioning and, you know, at least more comfortable for the people that have to interact with that person.
Just about the end of our allotted time for this interview. We've been talking tonight, besides talking about cats, our noses,
and down with the patriarchy, and gender is a construct. Yeah.
We're talking tonight with Kimberly McNeilis. Kimberly moderates the group Gender Query, which meets on Zoom right now, but I guess when this pandemic's over, you'll probably be back at the Q Center.
Certainly hope so.
It's been a real delight talking to you, Kimberly. Can you remind me one more time of how can people connect with your group?
Yes, thank you so much. So Gender Query, if you go to pdxqcenter.org, there's information on the Q Center website. Or if you search for Gender Query on Facebook, you should hopefully find the group there as well. And again, we try to meet the first Monday of every month, 7 p.m. Pacific, on Zoom.
Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for joining us tonight on Transpositive.
You're welcome, and thank you so much again for having me. Really appreciate it.
All right, so I'm going to stop recording.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for